Dann check auf das Before we begin, I'd like you to all copy down those four questions that we spoke about yesterday. Manually move it forward. Four questions. Did you do it or am I doing it? Yeah. Oh, there they are. Maybe you can write them down, and then what we're going to ask you to do. Of course, no one will really write them. Everyone will take a photo of it with their mobile phones. Why write when you can click? No, you should write it down. I was just being decisions. Actually, all the improvements that Kali Yuga offers us makes our brain weak, actually. Have you found Krishna with you and helping you in your life, especially during difficult times? Give an example. What do you find most helpful to think or do during difficult times? Describe an experience where a greater benefit has been born of difficulty. So what I would like you to do, not now, and don't forget about it though. But please answer the questions in a simple way, not in a philosophical way, but in an experiential way, just what your experience was. And if you so choose to write the answers. And then please send them by email to Chaitanya Prabhu, who will forward them to me. That would be very helpful if you'll do this. But you can, and also you can keep it anonymous if you like.
The email ID would
be good. Huh?
Email ID.
You can send it from your mother's. No one will know. You can send it to me directly then, and then I'll erase it immediately. And I won't even know. Or you could put it on a flash drive and post it. Or anyway, figure it out. Raise your hand if you need a little more time to do this, to write this down. I'm not sure I'm going to yet. It depends what you're going to say.
These questions, can you tell us your answer regarding the Krishna consciousness? You have a success in your life. These all purpose have been all Krishna.
Realization. Well, I've been speaking about it all yesterday.
For 30, 40 years.
But I was speaking about it yesterday. I even told three stories yesterday. No, I'm not going to excuse you. Maybe I'm okay, I'll excuse you. But don't do it again.
There was the one about the motorbike. Yeah.
The camera. I almost lost my camera. And actually with that camera I ended up taking so many photographs of Srila Prabhupada. At 26 Second Avenue. I took photographs with that camera that ended up being in the BTG of Prabhupada in New Vrindavan. It was a very fortunate camera. I remember standing when Prabhupada was giving a class at 26 Second Avenue. I think it must have been in 1968. He was giving class facing this way, say, I don't think there were any deeds or anything at that time. And I sort of just stood there as he was giving class, and he was about that far away speaking that direction. There's no flash or anything like that. And he just didn't say anything. It probably disturbed himself. And also, one weekend we went on an outing to, must have been Radhastami. We went on an outing to the botanical gardens in Brooklyn, and Prabhupada went by car somehow or another, and we all went by subway. And then the next week, and there was one devotee named Damodar Prabhu who had taken some videos. That wasn't videos, excuse me. Film. Do you know what film is? Yeah. So he had taken some movies. Yeah, that one we can relate to. Movie. He was a professional, actually. But he had a little movie camera, so he took some movies of the event. And then the next weekend, he showed the movies of it. So he brought his projector, and we all sat in chairs, and Prabhupada came down and sat in chairs, and we were all watching the movie together of the event. But Prabhupada was engaged in these activities with us, but clearly, CDs or videos of him, it's clear that he was just participating in this dimension, but he was not on the same level as the rest of material existence was on. He was clearly on a different level. And the experience of being with him was clearly like that as well. Clearly like that. And he answered from a different level. You ask him a question and you could never predict what the answer was going to be. Please put the volume down. It was coming from a different level of experience. His answers. Okay, a little bit more. Okay. How I would like to begin. Okay, we could take this down, and not yet start the other one. It's harder to do it with most of them. Yeah. Okay. There were some things I wanted to speak about today about the principles that we've been hearing about in Jagtrini Mataji's class. Thank you. and also what I spoke about yesterday. And we've been speaking about the nature of the material world being difficult, distressful, and disappointing, as well. And we know this, and we know we've heard, and we already knew in one sense what the solution for this is, and that is to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, to surrender and hold on tightly to Krishna's lotus feet, and not let go, regardless of how difficult or disastrous the world is. And life can be seen, on one level, is practically speaking a preparation for the ultimate disaster of the material body, and it's, which is graphically described in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, when the pastime of Paranjana is described. It's so graphic there, the body is doing its best to, or the snake of one's life, of the prana is doing one's best to fend off all the invaders that are trying to destroy it. But eventually the snake of the prana of one's life becomes too weak and succumbs. And the giving up of the city of the material body is death. And it's so disturbing. Obviously it's disturbing, because all that we think is us and all that we think is ours is forcibly pulled from us, or we are forcibly taken away and forced to give up all these false concepts. So we know these things, everyone knows these things. And we can even see life as a preparation for that moment, and see that the difficulties that we encounter and the disappointments that we encounter and the frustrations that we encounter every single day, we can see those as our helpers and friends in one sense. And we can assess our situation to see how consistently, or if we are at all, taking shelter of Krishna. Because that is because Krishna's lotus feet and his shelter is all that's really going to protect us when the time for, as we said, the fifth D comes along, the big D, death, comes along, and it's obviously the most heavy of times. So we know these things, but yet, as we go through our days, we are in a daze, practically speaking, and we tend to be, I'm speaking from first-hand experience, you wanted to hear about first-hand experience, and now I'll tell you about first-hand experience, it is that we tend to be so superficial in life. What does superficial mean? It means just on the surface. Our consciousness tends to remain on the surface only, and completely absorbed in things that are superficial, that don't have deep meaning. And what is the opposite of superficial? The Sanskrit word for that is paramhamsa. And a paramhamsa is one who has captured the essence of life, the essence of existence. And why he is called a paramhamsa, why the person is called a paramhamsa, who has captured the essence of life, the essence of existence, is because it's named after the Rajahans, who has the unique capacity, when drinking a mixture of milk and water, he can extract the essence of the mixture, he can extract the milk and leave the water. So this is what we are really being called to do, is extract the essence of life, the actual purpose of life. But yet, although we know that, and although we have our moments of inspiration, we tend to be absorbed in the superficial. And From my experience, it is very difficult to get off the superficial platform. It is very difficult to get off the superficial platform consistently. Difficult at all, especially difficult consistently. I remember in 1973 or 4 perhaps, I had, at that time of my life, I had never seen a dead body. So I was already older already, but I wasn't, I'd never seen a dead body. And I had, at that time, I had a job in Melbourne, and I had just arrived in Melbourne from Hong Kong and preaching there, and then I wasn't alone. Mataji was there too, and also Lalita was very little at that time. She was just born. And I had a job. And the people I was working in, the place is still there, I think, the People's Palace. Somehow or another I had this job as like a booking clerk in the People's Palace Hotel in downtown. Is that still there? Somewhere in downtown Melbourne? Well, since no one knows, it's probably not there. There was a Salvation Army hotel. I had to do something when I first arrived. So the people there knew that I was a Hare Krishna devotee. So there was one old man. He was a booking clerk also. And he used to tease me a lot, make fun of me, and not in a nice way. And then one day, or one evening, I was on night duty, and one evening, he had been drinking a lot of alcohol, not mango lassi, but alcohol, and he had a big red nose, and he came in, and I was on duty, and right in front of me, he had a heart attack. And I was holding him, and he was like, screaming and crying, you know, sitting in pain, so much pain, and then he went to the hospital, and then his mood towards me changed very much, and I kept getting messages asking me to pray for him, because it's superficial, and he was confronted with death. His death, and then after some days, cruel death took him away. And there was a funeral. And he was going to be the first body I was going to see. That was what I was thinking too, and I went to the funeral, and I went with the religious persons who were the head of the organization there. We went in a car together, but I never saw that body because they kept the lid on the coffin closed the whole time. But after the ceremony, it was very sobering. It was extremely sobering just being there. And after the ceremony, I drove back with the head religious people, and I was in a very sober mood. And I was very surprised that they were just talking. They wanted to put the radio on. They were just talking about this superficial thing and that superficial thing and this superficial thing. I was very surprised. But it shouldn't be surprising, because it is so difficult, unless you're the person dying, to keep off the superficial platform. And life, especially Kali Yuga, it is engineered specifically to keep everyone continuously superficial. There are distractions, continuous distractions, between the advertising, between the television, between the news, everything to keep one on the superficial platform and entertained. Prabhupada once complained about that he was walking in jewels and seeing that the people were just playing this and that and playing on. So Prabhupada complained that we are trying to get people to be serious and stop wasting that time, and they're inventing newer and more ways to waste time. And then there's all the forms you have to fill out. You want to do anything, it's all the forms. I once saw this book by a leading psychologist, and it was about old age. And he said it's so difficult because of all the forms you have to fill out continuously between your income tax and between your this and everything you do. There's forms and forms and so many, and then there's the emails and on. It's just everything. The festival of yoga keeps everyone on the superficial platform, and I would like to define the superficial yoga days. And it keeps one thinking that's what you can't do. And everyone is so busy with just maintaining oneself. Prabhupada said that he would say that in the villages in India years ago, people had some land and they wouldn't have to travel an hour to work every day and an hour back from work. And people, and they were with their families, and the father, and you can even see this in India, that when the mothers would go to the fields and do something, and the children would be right there with them, either helping or just playing in the dust of Braja. And there wouldn't be this long going back and forth. And I've heard Prabhupada say in lectures, that you could grow, say, four crops a year. So if people were industrious, someone who was industrious, they would grow four crops, or three or four crops a year, and someone a bit little less so, he could just grow one crop on his land, and that would be enough to feed him for the whole year. So that means the rest of the time, now in Vrindavan, you see the people just sit around, the men, they just play cards and send the ladies out to work in the fields or something like that. Just wasting time. But that extra time, one would have to live simply, but that extra time could be used for deep thinking, for hearing Shastra, for discussing Shastra, for chanting. One's whole life, one's whole existence didn't have to be completely wrapped up in our famous four activities of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, just maintaining one's life. It's such a struggle nowadays, and yet everyone is convinced we've made so much advancement from the primitive times when people had to just work in the fields. But it's such a struggle just to exist so often nowadays. The husband works, the wife works, and they're still in debt. Credit cards filled, mortgages, 20, 30 year mortgage to pay for the house. Such a struggle people are caught in. And the struggle means you have no time, and even when you have time, you have no energy to think anything other than superficial thoughts. People that come home from work after working in an office or a factory, and it just takes the soul out of you, the spirit out of you. And you know, you have your bosses, you have to please your boss, and on and on and on, and then you're tired, and what do they do? You can't think deeply. They just turn on the television and flick to some channel or something like that, and then there's all the anxieties of this disease and this attic, on and on and on and on and on and on, and like, and I only have a contract, I don't have a full-time job, and what's going to happen next, and this, and on and on and on and on, and there's no security, nothing one can rely on, which causes one anxiety in and of itself. And this is Kali doing its work. This is Maya and Kali Yuga doing their work, keeping everyone on the superficial surface platform. Very difficult, very rare one will ask a deep question, as Srila Sanatana Goswami, who retired from such a high service. He was practically the prime minister of Nawab Hussain Shah, and he and the finance minister, Srila Rupa Goswami, they retired, they left it to live like mendicants, beggars practically speaking, because they had a hidden treasure inside the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he approached Mahaprabhu, he asked the essential questions, and Mahaprabhu said, you already know the answers to these questions, but you're asking just to confirm them, because that's the nature of a sadhu. You're asking the questions that human life is meant for. Like, who am I? Because if you think about it, I was sort of just, suddenly I became me. I was just sort of, at some point I became conscious that here I am, and this is me. You begin sort of thinking in a mature way in teenage life, perhaps, and suddenly here I am. You know, you suddenly pop. You're in consciousness that I exist, and here I am, and I have choices in my life. But who am I actually, and how did I get into this specific situation? Why was I born in this particular family, in this particular place, to be conditioned to think in this particular way, in a particular body that has these kind of strengths, that looks in this way, has these kind of weaknesses, this kind of hair, this kind of this. And I've changed my body so many times, and I've remained the same. There's a continuity of consciousness, and I've changed my body. Well, who am I? Who am I actually? And although, and the second question he asked was, although I have no desire to suffer, why is it that suffering always comes to me unasked? What is this great mysterious thing called life? And very, very rarely people asking those questions. And Srila Prabhupada was insisting that we push these questions and put them in people's face, because no one is thinking deeply. And as the example that's somewhere in the Bhagavatam, I think it's in the fourth or fifth canto, there's a few examples, but this one about the man who's, or the deer, he's trying to drink some water, he's trying to enjoy something, and on this side of him, in front of him, he doesn't see the tiger coming. And on this side, there's a hunter pointing his arrow at him, and he's trying to drink the water and have a good time. Or the example that's sometimes given is that someone has fallen off a cliff, and he looks down and he sees the rocks and the snakes and everything down there, and he's just holding on to the branch, and on the branch there's some honey, and he's trying to taste the sweetness of the honey on the branch. And look at his situation. Okay. So that's how everyone is, more or less. And we have the thankless task of saying, excuse me, do you understand that you're going to die in a few moments, and you're going to fall down, and you're going to crush, your body's going to be crushed on the rocks, etc.? Do you understand that you're just thinking about the honey? Excuse me. Do you think you should do something on a more deeper level with your life?
After all, you have the capacity. You have the capacity to think more deeply. Use it. You've been given this intelligence. Don't simply become entangled in the superficial. Superficial means basically everyone's either their consciousness is on their bodies, and the enjoyment that the body affords to give them. No different from an animal. And even the mental faculties are engaged on the bodily level and thinking and worrying about the body only and that which is connected to the body. And it's very rare that someone is even on the intellectual platform and asking philosophical questions. And usually the people that do are like that, love the flavor of the intellectual platform, the tastes of intellectual delights that are available on that level. Quite highly addictive also. And everyone has forgotten or is in ignorance of the soul themselves, or even asking the questions about this. How did I pop into existence in this particular situation? Is it just a chance or combination of chemicals? Is that all I am? I don't feel like chemicals somehow or another. Does anyone, raise your hand if you feel like you're chemicals? No one. I mean, even though this is an audience that, of course, no one would say that, otherwise we'd chastise them heavily. But who feels like chemicals? Even the people in the street don't feel like chemicals. Are you an amino acid? Please raise your hand. A combination of 20 amino acids. Collagen being a very important one. But yet death stalks, is stalking everyone. So what we are suggesting, and now we're ready for, we have a way to show what I wanted to show yesterday about that morning walk with when Prabhupada speaks about, I got it right this time, about what Prahlad Maharaj had gained. Because life is full of its distresses, and those distresses are our friends in the sense that they push us away from the superficial. We want to live on the superficial level, not want to, but the thrust of life, the momentum of life tends to keep us on the superficial level and dreaming. A dreaming, superficial level that has nothing to do with reality. And the distresses in life and the difficulties in life and the disappointments and disasters of life, they force us. It disrupts the superficial illusion that we find ourselves, we're trying to make ourselves comfortable in. And how could you make yourself comfortable in an illusion? It's just illusion. Like you could be dreaming you're the king, but it's a dream. You could be dreaming that you don't have to open the door as you walk outside, but it's a dream, and when you try to do it, the illusion falls apart because reality always defeats illusion. So what is the gift, or what are we trying to tell people? What are we trying to apply to our own lives? What is Prahlad Maharaj captured, who was one of our exemplars, that we want to capture also? So now, if we just play that, please. Krishna willing, we'll have the right one. This is the Prahlad Maharaj one, for sure. Okay. Prahlad Maharaj is one of our exemplar devotees. We want to follow Prahlad Maharaj. We read this wonderful verse yesterday, the Prahlad.
Scientific research means to
It's working the way we want it. Yes, wait, it should be starting here, but it's not, is it? Okay.
It demands. What we can do.
Oh, we're backwards.
Because they are rash and foolish.
Okay, just listen to Prabhupada.
It is they simply make their body dirty, that's all. It is not really. If you bring a small children, what they do, then they it is not doing anything. It is a rascal. Similarly, you scientists, you are all rascals. You do not know anything. Puna chavita charvarava. Cheating the chief. Making research. What research you can do? You do not know anything, what research you can. And Vedi Vinyasani, Jasmin Vikyati, Saravinam Vidyatam Bhavanti. If you know the absolute truth, then all other things become known. But if you don't know the absolute truth, then what is your ignorance? If you know one thing, then you are, that's why you are talking. We are not officers, scientists, or philosopher or anything. But why you are challenging or talking so boldly? Because you know one thing, it's wrong. Therefore, we can say so boldly and challenge anyone. I'm not a DSC like you. How I can challenge you? I'm challenging you. How? Because I know. That is the statement of Veda. Jasmin Vidyati, Savamedam Vidyatam Bhavanti. If you know Krishna, the absolute truth, then all other things will be known out of you. It is such a thing. We are preaching Krishna consciousness, challenging all kinds of men in the society. So many scientists are coming, so many psychologists are coming. So, how we are confident to talk with him? Because we have learned little about Krishna. That's all. Is it not? You are a qualified scientist. Why are you challenging? Not that because you are my disciple, you are accepting all my challenges. You have got your reason. You are not a fool. So how it is possible? How it is possible? Because we are trying to know a little about Krishna, that's all. Therefore this Vedic injunction, these statements are there. If you get Krishna, then you will not hanker after anyone's profit. That's all profit is there. If you get Krishna, then all other kinds of profit will not enter. And what kind of profit this is? Jasmin Sri Guru Bhavi Kerala Vijayati. If one is situated in Krishna consciousness, in the greatest calamity of this world will not be disturbed. This is the greatest problem. There is a Prahlad Maharaj, a big giant, Hiranyakashipu. Is putting him always in difficulty. But he is not here. Yes, very Krishna. 5 years old boy. It's not at all disturbed. Father is giving soil. Alright. And throwing him from the hill and down. But he is steady. How is it possible? Guru Rabi is a Kena or a Vishala. Guru. Guru means heavy. Very heavy difficulties. That is not Vishala. It is not for time. No, Mr. Very good. It is such a thing that if you know Krishna, you know everything. If you are in Krishna consciousness, then you are not disturbed in the various type of challenges. So this thing should begin to be implemented. One thing, that will make his life sufferable. Now it is up to you scientists to explain. Yes.
This is it. That is research.
This is research. Yadittamasruva gunanu vandhanam. Uttamasruva. Uttamasruva means Krishna. Gunanu vandhanam. Describing his quality. Avijjita alpha. This is success of life. Avichita. Avichita means sinful. And how it is asserted? Kavibhi-yupitaha by great personality. They are decided. So this is the perfection of life. Kavibhi-yaduttama-sroka-vinaru-vandhanam avichita-vantyaha. This is Bhagavad. Each word, each land, all in the together. This is the perfection. This kind of writing is required. Not that I have researched and after 15 days, no, I did not write. This is the sign. It is childish length. I say, today it is all right. And after 15 days, no, no, it is all not all right.
Before it finds
out. It is a scientific or clever method of drawing money from others, that's all. In other words, simple word, cheating.
Yes. Prabhupada was very straightforward. So, this is the gift, this is what Prabhupada said we were distributing. There was one sentence that he spoke about. This is what we're giving. That shelter, Krishna, that can keep one completely steady. Such a shelter that one can be completely steady despite the greatest calamity. And that greatest calamity will find each and every one of us wherever we hide. And that we know as... So, and I think you spoke this morning about some verses from the 12th canto and the 3rd chapter. So these... It's like the summary in the Bhumi Gita at the end of that, the 3rd chapter of the 12th canto. It's almost like this is like the last instructions that Sukadev Goswami is giving Maharaj Prickett before he's leaving this world. Pumsa Kali, because Maharaj Prickett had asked the question, where Kali Yuga, after hearing about Kali Yuga, cool, maybe you could open up the door and open up a window, and one on that side and one right over there. He had asked the question that after hearing about Kali Yuga, it's so contaminating. Dravya deshatma sambhavam, dravya deshatma sambhavam, Kali pumsam Kali kritam dosham, that everything in Kali Yuga, every object, every place and every person even is contaminated. So where can one go to escape the contaminations of Kali Yuga? If every person, every place and every object is contaminated, where will one hide? So his answer was this, after describing this, he said, Savam Hariti Chitto Sto Bhagavan Purushottama. That somehow or another, all the contaminations, Savam Hariti, were killed, destroyed Chittosto, if we place within our heart Krishna, Bhagavan, Purushottama, that Supreme Person, Supreme Personality of Person. If we can just keep Krishna in our heart, then the contaminations will flee. Tasmat Savatma Rajan. Not Savatma. Tasmat Savatmana Rajan. If we should endeavor Sava Atma with all our self, we should endeavor Ridesto Kuru Keshava to place within our heart Keshava, Krishna. He who killed the Keshi demon, he who has beautiful hair, he who is the master of Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, Kesha Brahma Shiva, he who is their master, the Isha, and he who has beautiful hair, and he who killed Kesi, who is the most formidable of all the demons that Kamsa had sent. He was close, so close to Kamsa, and Krishna killed him. Kesi came rushing at Krishna with his mouth open. First he tried to trick Krishna. He came to him rushing towards him so fast, making the earth tremble, with his mouth open practically as if he was going to swallow Krishna. Then quickly he turned around and tried to rear up and crush Krishna with his iron-like hooves. And Krishna took him and caught him and threw him so far away. And he was stunned. And then he came, he recovered, and rushed again towards Krishna. And this time he opened his mouth, and he was going to try and swallow Krishna. And Krishna, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, as he was rushing, he went like this. You want to eat something? Well, eat this. Your mouth is open. He thrust his left arm in his mouth and expanded it. Killed him. So somehow or another, Sukadeva is saying, place Keshava, place Krishna in your heart. And astoundingly, Tasmat, that's the conclusion. We'll endeavor for this. And then you will achieve the supreme destination if you do this. And Atma Bhavam Nayat Yanga, that if you do this at the time of death, Miya Mano, at the time of death, if you can somehow place Krishna in your heart, you will achieve the final destination, and you will achieve your actual spiritual identity, Atma Bhavam Nayat Yanga. Atma Bhavam, the Bhava of who you are, you will achieve that. And someone may say, just by remembering Krishna, the time of death, you're going to achieve the highest destination and achieve your siddhadeya, your perfect spiritual body. Why would Krishna, just for that one occurrence? And our acharyas have answered that question by saying, yes. Krishna is so magnanimous, this is not difficult for him. He is so generous of spirit. He is not miserly of spirit. And how to do this? To fix Krishna in the heart. Then that famous verse, Kalo Doshanati Rajanasti Eko Mahadguna Kirtanati the Krishnasya Muktsanga Paramraja. Who chant Krishna's names and don't stop. and all the benefits in the final verse in this chapter, in Kriti Yoga, the benefits through meditation, Jhayam, through meditation, in Treta Yuga, the benefits through performing sacrifices, and then in Dwapara Yuga, the benefits, all of it comes just by Hari Kirtanam. And then these final instructions end. So this is the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavatam. Take it, and you'll be, if you can hold on to the lotus feet of Krishna, place them in your heart, they will be the boat that will ferry you across the ocean of material existence, which we cannot swim across by our own power. And the great authorities have ascertained this, persons who have actually done it. And the world is involved on the superficial only, and they don't see the tiger stalking them and the hunter's arrows aimed at them. They don't see because they're so involved, they're so involved, we're so involved, I'm so involved in filling out the forms and checking out this and seeing that and what's the latest of this and on and on and on and on and on. Involved, the consciousness involved in the superficial. And do daiva midri samihana, and no taste for the holy names and for the Bhagavatam and the association of the devotees and the deities and the dham. So how unfortunate. Do daiva midri samihana. How unfortunate I am. So let the misfortune of our condition make us humble and then take shelter of Krishna's holy names. Without understanding our misfortune, and everyone in Kali Yuga is unfortunate, then the misfortune is the road to fortune, actually. If we could turn the difficulties, the distresses, that, oh, why did this happen to me? I don't deserve anything wrong because I never do anything wrong and I never hurt anyone and I'm such a little angel. Of course the horns come out every once in a while and the fangs come out every once in a while, but don't, no one should see that. So we have to, the point being that especially when it comes to the time of death, superficial will be superficial. It'll be like a plant that has its roots that are not deep. What's going to happen when there's a storm? It's going to be knocked right over. So this is what we're watching for in life. Day by day, well, this happened today. I missed the bus. In Melbourne, we have the great fortune of missing trams, except that they go so slow that even if you miss them, you can walk faster than they are. And then, oh, I disturb. What did I have? Well, do I take shelter of Krishna? Or do I get disturbed when I'm disturbed? Do I let this push me to Krishna? Have I passed this test? This Krishna has kindly sent me this. Have I passed it or have I failed it? Did I take shelter of Krishna? Did I call out to Krishna? When the disappointment, the little disappointment happens, when the difficulty occurs, when the, what's number three? Distress actually happens. At distress, very difficult. The mind starts getting stronger and stronger. What to speak of calamity time, disaster time? What to speak of? I said, what to speak of? What to speak of at that time when there's so much disorientation and pain? It's not that we can say, oh yes, I remember reading in the Bhagavad Gita that now is the time that, because it's about time to die, I think I'm probably going to die any minute now, so I probably should chant Krishna's names. Yeah, it's probably a good time to do it. And it's not it's not quite like that from what I've seen. It's a very distressful time. Pain, disorientation, attachments forcibly broken, ripped from us, etc. Forcibly, nothing you can do about it. Helpless, you're helpless. No strength to move your fingers even, often. The slightest touch, someone going like this can be extremely painful. And one Mataji who was near the end explaining that to me, he said, when my husband was dying and he was explaining this to me, I couldn't understand it. How could that be extremely painful? But now I can understand it, he said. So we have to, depth in life is the best thing we can do for depth. And depth is what we want, because we want to go to Krishna, we want to be with Krishna. So in this regard of taking shelter of Krishna, there were two questions that I wanted to discuss first. We need the last one. There are two questions that aren't exactly on the point, because the point is we want depth. So we're going to talk about getting deep in a few moments. But first I'd like to discuss two questions that seem to naturally come up. And this third part, the part we're going to discuss now, will come out to be balancing action with dependence on Krishna. Because ultimately we're saying that we want to depend on Krishna and surrender to Him. Because Gotripte Varanam Tatam means, that's the essence of surrender, and that means accepting Krishna as everything for us, as our protector, as our maintainer, our shelter. So there are two questions that come up. The first one is this one right over here that we'll discuss. Do we depend on Krishna to fulfill our material needs, desires, and ambitions? Because perhaps I'm not on a pure Paramhamsa level, and so we're saying we should depend on Krishna. Well, how about on this level? I want something. Material needs means I need something, but material want, desires, means I want something. It's not exactly a need, but this is what I want, pushed by what I want and my ambitions. Is this legitimate to do this? So I'd like to discuss this a little bit, because it's one of those things where, hearing Prabhupada discuss it and reading on this topic, he gives and takes away immediately. because it says it in the Bhagavad Gita, what's the verse? Chatur? No. Chatur vida vidante mam jana sukritino arjana arta gigyas artati. So there are four kinds of persons who approach Krishna. And they are Sukhatina, they are great souls. And one of them is the one, the Arta Gigyasi Artati, he wants. He wants. And he approaches Krishna. And still he's considered a great soul. And also in the second chapter, the third chapter of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Akama Sava Kamava Moksha Kamo Daradi Tivrena Bhakti Yogeni Ajeta Purusha Para, that even if you have no material desires, or if you desire Krishna, or if you want liberation, you should still Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, with great force and focus, you should worship Krishna. So on one hand, the answer to that question, should we depend on Krishna and worship Krishna for our material desires, on one hand, on one level, the answer is unequivocally yes. And with that same hand, we'll now take it away. Because that's so foolish. So Prabhupada would criticize, nothing personal, the Christians for give us this day our daily bread, for asking God for bread. Now what was his rationale for criticizing? We all need bread or rice to eat, so why criticize? And Prabhupada would also, he would criticize and say, yes, we don't, it is good that they're doing that, but it is not the best. Because God, Krishna, is already supplying bread and food and the needs of countless living entities. He's in everyone's heart. He knows your needs. He's supplying. He's the maintainer, is Vishnu. There is no need to ask him for these things. According to your faith, he'll give them to you. And for the devotee, he cares for the devotees. So in every relationship, there's two parts. There is what you should be doing and what the other person should be doing. So when we're saying, give us this daily bread, we're thinking about what Krishna should be doing. We're telling him what he should be doing. But in every relationship, this is what people tend to do. Tell the others what they should be doing, and that's the cause of most problems. Instead, we should keep our mind on what we should be doing. So we shouldn't be, our responsibility in our relationship with Krishna isn't asking and telling Krishna what he should be doing, but it's what we should be doing. What we should be doing is saying, Krishna, how can I serve you? O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please accept me as your servant. I want to serve you. That is the constitutional, natural, fulfilling position of every living entity. So, yes, it's pious to ask Krishna to fulfill. But if there's one verse in the Bhagavatam spoken by Lord Brahma, one of the later verses in his prayers, where he's trying to understand the magnanimity of Krishna's heart. And he says that it starts out, Esha Goshtam, Goshtam, that if when Putana approaches you, who's a witch, but she's disguised herself as a devotee, her intention is to kill you, but she's disguised herself as your mother, a nurse, Datri. And if you give yourself, if you've given yourself to her, because you've accepted the little bit of good which is only on the surface that she was doing, she was disguised as a mother. If you've accepted the good in that and neglected the bad and given yourself to not only her, but her whole family, Baka and Aga, what a family. So he says, if you've reciprocated with her in that way, when what she came to do was horrible, how are you going to reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan, who have given you everything with love? Their lives, their families, their wealth, everything they consider yours, just meant for you. Now how? I'm wondering, it's bewildering me. How? What are you going to give to them if you've already given yourself to Putana for her gift? How are you going to reciprocate? And his conclusion was, you remain always in their debt. You won't be able to reciprocate with them because of the magnanimity of your heart. You remain always in their debt. And when you're in the debt to someone, it means you're always obliged to that person. Full-heartedly obliged. And here we are asking for bread and asking for, please, please let my sandcastle be the biggest in the beach before the waves come and knock it down. Like approaching, the other example is like approaching the king who says, I'll give you whatever you want. Whatever you want, I'll give you. And you reply, I want some rice. I'm a poor man. Just give me a palmful of rice. Give you everything. Give you himself. Remain in your debt. And this is what we want. So the answer is, do we depend on Christians to fulfill our material needs, desires, and ambitions? Okay, why not? but perhaps we could do better. But if we can't, we should. But Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajaita. Tivra means with power. Yajaita Purushapara. We should worship Krishna. And then the power of that devotional service to Krishna, that worship, will wash away the boulders of material desires, just like the Ganga at its source in Gomukh. It washes, it moves the biggest boulders because it is so powerful at that level. So with powerful devotional service, the boulders of our obstacles moved by that potency. So that's one question. And the second question has to do with action and dependence on Krishna. Because there's such a tendency to think, well, dependence on Krishna means, like there's a Chinese saying, I can't remember, I don't know the Chinese of it, but saying that there was a dog waiting somewhere. He was hungry and he was waiting. He was sitting somewhere. And a rabbit came along. And he was running so fast, he smashed into a rock, and he died. And the dog, as dogs do, ate him. So he thought, this is a very good system. So he just waited there. And perhaps he starved to death also. So what do we do? Do we just, does depending on Krishna mean just, is waiting, and we don't do anything? Or so, and there are examples on both sides of this. Do we just tolerate when we're in difficulty? Because the particular topic we were talking about is disappointment, difficulty, distress, and disaster. So what do we do when we're accustomed to these things? We've been talking about surrendering to Krishna, putting Krishna's lotus feet in our heart, and fully taking shelter of him. Well, does that mean we don't do anything? We just take shelter of him. The bus is coming down the road and we happen to be on the middle of the road. Do we just depend on Krishna or do we move out of the way? So, do we tolerate? Whoops, do we act? First we'll go to tolerate. So I thought of a few examples of that when Prabhupada. One time he Pustakrishna Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's servant, said one time he was on an airplane with Prabhupada, and in those days they allowed smoking on airplanes, and of course they would sit in a non-smoking section, but in this particular case there was a person right in front of them started smoking. So Pusta Krishna Prabhu naturally said, please, this is a non-smoking section, don't smoke. So he kept on smoking. So Pusta Krishna Prabhu was getting very upset and wanted to really chastise him. It's the wrong ringtone. We only allow cow ringtones. We don't mind them at all. And the occasional peacock. Okay, too. Or coil birds. Okay, too. So Prabhupada stopped him and he said, if we can't tolerate disturbances, how are we different from everyone else? That's what Prabhupada, how he responded to that particular circumstance. There was another one on that. The Avanti Brahmana in the 23rd chapter of the 11th canto, he practiced tolerance like anything. Mahaprabhu said, Trinada Pisuni Trina, should be tolerant like a tree. So the Avanti Brahmana, people would, he would beg, they would steal his food, they would call him, insult him, they even put him in cages. They treated him worse than an animal. And he had just made this decision on the deepest level to be internally satisfied regardless of the externals of the situation. So he never reciprocated with how people were treating them in an improper way. He just accepted everything. This is my fate. But then, on the other level, on the action level, when Prabhupada wanted to get the Juhu land for Krishna, he fought like anything, and there was a great, great battle, even to the degree that when he heard that the chief opposition who was trying to cheat him. What the man would do, he would sell the land to people that he had, and then he would put in a clause that if you don't do such and such by a certain date, you have to give it the land back to me. And he wouldn't let them do that thing by that date, and he would take their deposits and eat it, as we would say. So he was cheating. He had done this several times already. But he had really met his match when he tried to do this to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada fought. And this man was, he had a newspaper, he knew all the officials in Mumbai. And he fought and fought back. And there's this one, and he had gotten this, and they had built a small temple. And it's an incredible story. And Prabhupada, and some of Prabhupada's supporters, one of them was this Mr. Setti, who was such a hero. And he had a construction company. And they had ripped down the temple, and the devotees, these gundas came, these thugs came, and they ripped down the temple, and some of the Mataji devotees were protecting the deities, and they would pull them off, the ladies in India, pulled them off the altar by their hair, and they were screaming, and wrecked the temple. And then the court order, the judge did something a little clever, and he said, if you can build it by the end of the weekend, rebuild it, then it's there. So Prabhupada got this Mr. Setti, like a friend almost, but a disciple, devotee, but a friend, but a man who was powerful himself. He agreed to do it. So so he was there, he was sitting there while his workers were rebuilding the temple on Saturday, and they had to work all night long to get it done. So this man came, the Mr. Nair came and said, I'm going to come tonight with my gundas and we're going to destroy everything. And Mr. Sethi said, his son's name was Brij Mohan, he said, Brij Mohan, bring my shotgun. That was his response. He said, you come. Go ahead. These are heroes. These were Prabhupada's men. And on and on, there's so much more to the glories of this man. And Prabhupada in the Bombay temple. Have you ever been to the Bombay temple upstairs? And Prabhupada said, you can stay here. He told the Smith, said, you can stay here. I'm a sannyasi, I can live anywhere. This is yours, for you and your family. And he said, but Prabhupada gave it to him. So incredible. And so what's going to be the fate of someone like that, who's given everything in that way? Even though he lived at home his whole life, will Krishna take care of him? What do you think? So Prabhupada fought and fought, and Arjuna fought and fought. So they really act. In one circumstance there is complete tolerance, then there is action. And do we accept everything as Krishna's grace? When King Chitraketu was a Vidyadhara, when he was cursed to become a demon, he said, Narayana Paroksave, Nakutastina Bibhiti, Swaga Pavaga Narakeshu. This is actually what Lord Shiva said, describing the Vidyadhara's acceptance of the curse. Okay, I didn't do anything wrong, but okay. You want to curse me like this? Okay. And Parvati was amazed. And Lord Shiva then said that verse, Swaga Pavaga Narakeshu. This is the quality of a devotee. For him, he's so internally situated, he doesn't care about the externals. So what do we do, is the point. And then you have another example, that Jadabharat, in the, which canto of the Bhagavatam? Which canto? Fifth canto, thank you. So Jadabharat, on one hand, he was about to be sacrificed, killed, and offered to the goddess Kali. And he didn't protest at all. But then, when he was being chastised by Maharaj Vahugana for not carrying the palanquin properly, he chastised the king, practically speaking. So one circumstance, he tolerated. Another circumstance, he acted. So what do we do? Do we tolerate? Do we act? Do we depend on Krishna only? So, it's hard to tell sometimes what to do. How to decide how to respond to a difficulty, distress, disappointing, or disaster. How to respond? What are we supposed to do? It's difficult sometimes to know exactly what to do. So I've written down a few pointers on this. And the first point is, no, there's no inherent contradiction between acting and dependence on Krishna. That's what Krishna told Arjuna. Mam anusmara yudhya cha. You think about me and you act. And Prabhupada, in discussing something recently with Satsarupa Maharaj, I saw actually on his website, he said that Prabhupada told me he was trying to purchase a building in Boston in the very early days. And Prabhupada told him, pray and endeavor. Both. Depend on me and fight. Same as Krishna taught. You pray, but endeavor also. So the question though is, it's quite interesting, and how do you know what to do? How do you respond to these difficulties and circumstances? It can be quite difficult. So I put together some guidelines that are really only guidelines, and it's not a magic formula, because sometimes you can't do these things. So what I put together, and it's in the little book at the end, some of the notes that I put down on this. The first one is, if you're going to act, first you have to decide what you're going to do. So, and this is even a little bit tricky too. So what I've written down here is, often should action be required, because sometimes you can't act. There's nothing you could do. But you don't have time to even think and decide. But often you have to make a decision and you have time to think of what to do. So often should action be required, working out our best course of action is difficult. As best as you are able, decide what you must do. So first decide. To guide your decision, pray, consult with previous and current instructions from Guru and Vaishnavas, use Shastra, use your intelligence, use your experience, use your intuition, your heartfelt thoughts, seek advice from required experts. If you have a heart problem, just don't pray about it. You have to go to see some doctors. You have to go to see a few doctors and get some opinions also, expert opinions, because this isn't exactly in your field. So this is just practical, but use Shastric intelligence. One time there was one devotee, who I know personally, whose son was born with a hole in his heart. And the doctors wanted to operate, and he asked Prabhupada, what should I do? And Prabhupada said, you know the philosophy, you should apply it. And sometimes, on the other hand, we want to go to our spiritual master or an authority and, you know, say, and just, here's this insolvable problem, what do I do? So if we're really babies in Krishna consciousness, sometimes they'll tell us, yes, yes, because we don't have the discrimination to figure out what we should do, or we don't have the principles in place or the pillars. But when one's a little more old, we take it a different way. We make the decision, and then we go to the second step of asking for confirmation, perhaps, is this a proper decision? But we do the work first, and then we can be corrected or adjusted. But some devotees tend to do it the other way. They want to just hear it all and solve the problems of my life. Don't do that to me with an email, please. I'll just forward them to Mataji or to someone else or something like that. There's only so many emails one can answer it. It's one's life. And then seek advice from required experts when appropriate, and try to act in such a way that your actions will be pleasing to Krishna, Guru, and the Vaishnavas. Be practical, be brave. And sometimes we find we can't do anything. We have to just wait. And one Shastric example of seeking direction. So in other words, decide in a very deep way. But sometimes again, we have to wait. We can go to the next step. And this is such an amazing story, how when the earth had fallen into the Garbhodak ocean, and Brahma saw that, and he couldn't figure out how to get it up. So the Bhagavatam says, what can we do? We who are engaged in the matter of creation, it's best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. We'll leave things in Krishna's hands. And then Varaha was born. And where did Varaha take his birth? One would have to say, out of the most unlikely place, which was, he came out of the nostril of Lord Brahma. Now, no one would have expected that. But sometimes Krishna and Krishna's mercy is born out of the most unlikely place. When we're actually taking shelter of him and trying to serve him and trying to please him, act in such a way that's pleasing to him, doing what's best for our Krishna consciousness, Krishna's mercy sometimes comes in this most unlikely place. So first, I'm suggesting here, although it's not a, well, I think I better go, because these are all interesting and entangling, sort of, there's lots of questions that can come. Let me just go through this simple presentation. Then consult. This is what I'm proposing. But sometimes we ask or pray first, and the consultation, as I'm putting, is as best as you're able, consult with or confirm your conclusions with Shastra, Sadhu, and Guru. Follow the example of Sanatana Goswami spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, since you possess the Lord Krishna's potency, Mahaprabhu said, you certainly know the answer to these things. However, it is the nature of a sadhu to inquire. Although he may know these things, the sadhu inquires for the sake of strictness. So confirm, at least confirm with trusted authorities. Is this the right decision? Don't just go on your own thoughts. Don't be alone in difficult times. Don't keep alone. I also had noted down the availability of wise counsel from trusted advanced devotees indicates Krishna's blessing. It is great fortune to have someone, a trusted person, trusted wise person who you can consult with and exchange ideas or get a confirmation with. And then a third step, and of course these the order sometimes, they're all mixed together sometimes, but then we can really pray. This is the best I can do. I'm dependent on you, Krishna, ultimately. Please. And this is the basic point that we're bringing out. Ultimately, whether we the result of all actions is ultimately dependent on Krishna, and whichever little formula we have for making our decisions before putting them into action, the essence of this is the dependence on Krishna, and to place somehow or another Krishna in our consciousness, in our hearts, and taking shelter of Him and surrendering to Him. So we can do things, anything on a superficial level. We can even be devotees on a superficial level. But the nature of the material world is that it will keep trying to knock us over, remove the superficiality through the difficulties and distresses and disturbances, because it can't be the spiritual world here. This is the material world. So let us try to use these difficult, no one wants them, but here we are, and let us use them to take shelter of Krishna. So act, be Krishna conscious, act, depend on Krishna for the results. There's so many examples in the Bhagavatam of the devotees. We won't read them in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jagadananda Pandit was in a difficult situation. He didn't know what to do. He prayed to Krishna to help him. Gajendra prayed to Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj in a difficult situation. But we should know that unless we are deep and practiced in our taking shelter, practice in calling out to Krishna for help, if the difficulty or disaster is strong, it will be very difficult to hold tightly to Krishna's lotus feet. So we should practice. We should practice. We should practice. Call out for help to Krishna and his devotees. And the verse, and we'll end in a moment for a break. The verse that Mahaprabhu accepted as very good, as he was a sannyasi, but it's really a guideline for everyone, is this Itansa astaya paratmanistam adhyasitam purvatamara maharshibi, is that I will cross over this ocean of material difficulties, of material, the material ocean of distress, which is so formidable, by taking shelter of paratmanistha, by being fixed in the shelter of the Lord, fixed in his lotus feet. In the 23rd chapter of the 11th canto, 57th verse perhaps. And then, this is the path, he says, of the acharyas, maharshivi, purvatamara. This is the path that all the great devotees have tread. They've walked this path. It's a proven path. Dharatma param, that this world is such a difficult place. And it's huge, so hard to cross over, and there's such a tendency to be superficial, and the culture is superficial. And we associate with superficial people. But we somehow, if we can take shelter deeply of Krishna, then we'll be able to do it. Tomorrow, Mukundangri na sevanaiva. Take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, of Krishna, of his lotus feet. So I'll just read one sentence here, and then more, or two sentences here. Accepting oneself as Krishna's servant, which Gotrapte Varanam Tata means that when you give yourself to Krishna, you have a naturally what comes along with that is the feeling that you're under Krishna's protection because you've given yourself to him. It's quite natural. So accepting oneself as Krishna's servant implies the performance of service to Krishna. And being a devotee means performing devotional service. So Prabhupada, when he would translate bhakti, he would always translate it as devotional service, not just devotion. But it was devotional service. So we want to do service. And our life in service to Krishna. And this is one of the great challenges of life, because we don't want to make a duality in our life, because like here's my home life, my family life, my work, and here's my devotional service. We want to put it together and live a harmonious life where it's one life with me as Krishna's servant, and all the parts are together, they're harmonious. Not to have a divided life. So this is the art of living spent for everyone, congregational members, but for everyone, how to keep all the elements of our life focused on Krishna's service. It may not be the perfect straight path, but maybe I have to go a little bit like this, or a little bit like this, or even like this, but at least I'm Krishna's servant moving towards him. And I'm not going the opposite way. When I think, who am I? I'm Krishna's. I'm Krishna's servant. I'm giving myself to that. So our life in service to Krishna will then be the field on which to practice applying the surrendered devotional service that one has learned as philosophy. So that's the real part. We know the philosophy, but now to apply it in the field of our service, of our lives, this is the most wonderful thing. And then the attempt to do that, regardless of how successful we are, or the attempt to do that is glorious. And every time we find we fail a test, that a difficulty comes, a distress comes, and I don't take shelter of Krishna, this is an assessment, a self-assessment. This means that I have to become deeper. I have to become deeper. Otherwise, when the final exam comes, Ante Narayana Smriti, I don't want to fail that. I want to actually capture the essence of life and life's purpose. So this takes seriousness in life. So call out for Krishna, for help to Krishna and his devotees. Difficulties then serve as friends. Remember Kunti Devi, she was actually preferred the disasters and difficulties. Remember, so many things we can remember. So many prayers here. And then in two more sections of this class, which we're not going to do right now, I've put them in the last two parts of this booklet, deepening, how to deepen our surrender to Krishna. And in a very real sense, that's on page 106, in a very real sense, there's no news there. Just take shelter of your sadhana bhakti, deeply, the hearing, the chanting, the deities, the devotees association, the holy names, the Bhagavatam. And then in the last part of it, so don't run from Krishna. That's the essence of it. Don't run from Krishna when there are difficult times, but somehow run to Krishna when the times aren't easy. And then I put together I wrote some difficult thoughts on surviving difficult, some thoughts on surviving difficult times. There's another section that we've put here. I wrote specifically some thoughts on surviving difficult times because these are just some thoughts, just some ideas that I've gathered from my own experience and thought of what I've heard and read. But these aren't the final words. I'm sure you could add some good points to this one as well. All moving more and more practically. Okay, I'll stop the presentation now, I wanted to do something practical to see if we can move this more to the future to help apply these principles, because it's easy when our concentration is focused on this particular point to become inspired, but as soon as we start singing Sarira Vidyajal, it could all be gone. In 7 seconds. So I thought of some follow-up things we could do, but I think I've spoken for so long already that I think we should take a little break to allow everyone to breathe and think and etc. So please, right now, what time is it over there? Is it
12:30?
Okay. So please come back exactly at 10 minutes or 15 minutes? 10. Okay. Come back at 20 of exactly and be ready to act, but depend on Krishna. But come back, please, on time. Thank you. But breathe and move. Move your bodies around. Yes. I knew it was going to happen because this is many days worth of classes, and then the classes are just beginning, then all the discussions that come up on how to practically take shelter of Krishna, etc. Jagtini Mataji suggested I make at least a short comment. I had one whole section on this topic, but I knew there wasn't going to be enough time for this, what to speak of adding more. But the question of what do you do if you want to make your life harmonious and all the parts of your life going in the same direction, you can't make it going in the same direction externally in one sense. But internally, you should keep all the pieces going in the same direction. For example, if you have children, and if you want to force your children to all go in your direction and use a lot of strong force, you might have a lot of trouble on your hands. Because they're individuals, or your family members, or whatever, or your boss or something like that, for example. You can't force. So what happens if some parts of your life aren't going in the same direction as you want to go in? So I heard recently Prabhupada speak about family in this way, when someone asked him a question, and he said, when someone is in a family or anyone is in difficulty, what do you do? You know, if it's like material difficulty, what do you do? You know, and he said, you try to help them, naturally, is practical, but you try to help them with their Krishna consciousness at the same time. But ultimately, you have to be detached. One has to be detached ultimately. Because everyone has their fate to deal with. And to one degree or another, everyone has their karma to deal with. And one has their path to tread, to walk on, back to Krishna. So sometimes dealing with family members, all you can do is give them prasadam now and again. Sometimes they won't even take prasadam. But you do as best you can. You try sincerely to help them. I see this with very much, especially with mothers. When mothers with their children, especially their sons, they really want them to be Krishna conscious, and sometimes they really want to push them to be Krishna conscious and like that. And have a dream for them. Or they want them to be a doctor or something like that, or a big something or other, or a great architect. But ultimately, people have their fate to meet. So we try our best. We can be compassionate. So what I see with mothers, because motherly love is so special, what they always end up doing, regardless of, they want for the child, and if the child is resistant, to even if something is good for them, and they're at a certain age, especially in the Western culture, they pray and 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 pray to Krishna to help them, and pray to Radha Balava, and pray and pray and pray and pray and pray, and they don't stop praying. That's motherly love. There was another point about this, but it slipped my mind. It was a more practical point. As it comes back, I'll bring it up again. But this, of course, there's an art in this, like everything else in Krishna consciousness. There's an art in it. And Prabhupada said, in dealing with children, it's like when you have a horse, you can't... you can't pull back on the reins too much, because the horse will bolt out and break free. And so you give a little bit of leeway, and then you make it pull it back a little bit, and push it this way a little bit. A little bit of leeway. It's a skill like that, and some are very expert at it. Oh yes, now I remembered one thing to say. But the best way of all ways to influence others, and I actually studied this point almost academically, because I was writing a book on the art, called The Art of Teaching, and in Melbourne actually I did a lot of research in the university, and I was trying to think of when you're teaching, you have a class. I was teaching in the Gurukula, in the devotee school. And of course you want the children to be Krishna conscious. And for the first few years I was really trying to like force them to be Krishna conscious. And the example that what it felt like is that you were trying to pry their mouths open and to force Krishna consciousness in. But as I find out, the ability of a mouth to stay closed, the jaw muscles to keep the mouth closed and don't want you to force it open, are much stronger than your ability to force the mouth open. So it was such a struggle, and then I learned more the more subtleties of what it means to be a teacher. And the subtleties means, and why it's brahminical work, is that you do something to the atmosphere a little bit, and it's subtle, so that if you're doing it, that the children want to open their mouths, and then it's easy to feed them. So I was doing research to write a book, and I was thinking, well, how do you transfer? What's the best way to transfer the Krishna consciousness from one generation to the next? And so I looked in. I know that all religions have this question. And so, what's the best way to do it? Like in the old Vedic culture, it used to be in Vrindavan, there weren't so many choices, and there was so much social pressure to act in a particular way and follow this and follow that, that no one got out of line. But those days, they're not there in the West, and in India they're fading very, very fast. So what is the best thing we can do to transfer Krishna consciousness to our beloved family members or others that can make all the pieces of our life go in the same direction? I spoke about it before already, but What I concluded after my research of the most important thing you could do, would you like to hear it? is I went to a professor here in Melbourne. It was in the University of Melbourne, and he was world renowned for writing about ethics, the transference of values. How could a school, he was in the Department of Education, how can a school transfer values? And in that, I thought that was quite similar to what we want to do. And the conclusion was, and in ethics, they've tried so many different things, so many different ways to teach it in school, how to teach the children to be ethical. And they found that no matter how much we taught, it wasn't transferred into the practical dealings of the students. They used to do this thing called situation ethics, where they would as an intellectual exercise, they'd make up these very difficult puzzles. Say if your wife was dying of a dread disease, and there was one chemist who had created the cure for it, but he wanted $10,000 for it, and you didn't have the money. Is it ethical to steal it, to steal the medicine to save your wife, even though it's breaking this principle? So they put these dilemmas to the children and have them say, well, I think this. But they found that the children still were cruel to each other, and there was no ethics, there was no transference into the practical lives of the children. So what this professor's conclusion was, was that it's not what you say that's going to be important. It's how you react to life and what you actually value that's important. And that will be demonstrated by your actions. So if you want to influence others, you have to be tasting deeply your own Krishna consciousness yourself and act on that level and have that your own Krishna consciousness and your own satisfaction in Krishna consciousness and your own discriminating of what to do in Krishna consciousness you have to allow that to come down to your practical dealings and your practical decision making and your internal happiness that will come from that. That will be the most influential thing, factor on others. And like if you're in a school in ethics and you see one boy who's in the sixth grade beating a boy in the second grade, and you're the teacher, and you walk over to that sixth grade student and say, "Pum, I told you not to beat anyone smaller than you." So obviously the inconsistency of your action with what you're saying is going to have that student not listen to anything you've said or follow anything you've said. But if you live your life based on the principles that you value and you're getting spiritual nourishment from that, and you and in Krishna and there's an ethics, I always think that that ethics is such an important thing for Krishna consciousness movement. Ethics would mean you take the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, which is so exalted, and apply it to your daily dealings. That's what ethics is. How does Krishna consciousness apply to the daily interactions amongst devotees? And not only, "Oh Prabhu, could you do this?" Because Prabhu, of course, means master. "Prabhu, could you do this? Could you do that, Prabhu? Could you do this, Prabhu?" But what is the actual application of Krishna consciousness, the principles that we talk about and we hear about, to the dealings amongst devotees? What is our devotional culture? So this is a very, very interesting topic that I certainly am not qualified to speak about, and especially not now when we have 3 minutes. It's more to talk. But very important, because it's the culture, the ethical culture, that's going to influence the family members the most. How you're applying the Krishna consciousness in your dealings and everything, and your own internal self-satisfaction. So, Jagtrini Mataji, we have spoken a little about the topic. Did you want to add anything, or? Oh, even thinking about Prabhupada, most of our knowing who Prabhupada is him on the Vyasasan or on a morning walk and saying, "This one's a rascal, and this one's a rascal, and this one's a rascal," and he's there, he's in his position as the founder acharya of ISKCON, the protector of Vaishnava culture, and the Vaishnava Siddhanta. When he was on the Vyasasan, he was there as a lion. But Prabhupada was also more than that too. You know, his dealings were very, 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 very sweet and very, very personal and intimate too. But yet he wanted the mission to be spread, and there was such an urgency to it. So it's all very interesting. Okay. So what was the topic of our retreat here? Who remembers after we put... Huh? What was it?
It's a five-man defeat.
No, you can say it, Mataji. You're a naughty boy. You didn't raise your hand. Go on the corner. Yes, and what's the Bhagavatam's answer to it? And the answer, the advice of the Bhagavatam is to take shelter of Krishna. He is the support. He is the boat. His lotus feet are the boat that can carry us across the vast ocean of material suffering and difficulty. So we've discussed it theoretically and a little bit practically, but I've put a little bit about the practical. It would be nice to speak about the practical more, but we don't actually have time at this point. But what I wanted to do is to allow you to read that. You don't have to read it now, but I would like to read you to read, go over whatever notes you have taken, or read the last two sections, which are deepening our surrender and dealing practically with the difficulties of this world. And this is what I would like to do at this point. What's the latest we can practically go to, Keshwabu? Okay. Take a minute or two and quickly read those two sections. It's not long. One section, deepening our surrender to Krishna on page 106, and the section right after that, which is some thoughts on surviving difficult times. Read those two sections, but read it a little bit quickly. So, and then look up to me when you finish reading it, so I know that you've done so. You'll have time to read it later, too, but just get an idea of what it says. Especially the first section, deepening our surrender to Krishna. Secretary, open the door. This is really meant, if you want to take a step towards Krishna, and if you want to deal in a surrendered, more, if you want to take a step towards Krishna, especially in dealing with the disappointments, difficulties, distresses of life, if you want to move forward in that. So what I'm going to ask you to do is to take a vow. And you can take the vow, it can be for 1 week, or 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, and you don't have to do it if you don't want to, and if you don't feel comfortable doing it. But take a vow that has three parts. One is, first part is based on deepening our surrender, that section, which is basically deepening our performance of Panchanga Bhakti, the essential five ingredients of Bhakti, Sadhana Bhakti, which means get closer to the deities, deepen your japa and kirtan, your study of the Bhagavatam, or reading the Bhagavatam, or taking shelter of the Bhagavatam, just as we that prayerful reading of your service to the deities, your service, helping of others, your chanting more continuously. And consciously trying to turn to Krishna when a disturbance or a difficulty or a distress comes to you. So that's the vow. I'm going to deepen my relationship with Krishna in one way or another, and I'm going to try to turn to Krishna when a difficulty or distress comes to me. And they come every day, unavoidably. Disappointment. So that's the first part. So we'll ask you to write a vow, what you're going to do on the level of deepen. I'll read 15 minutes a day in this way, or something. Or stand in front of the deities and pray for a few minutes more. Just something more, deeper, and in a focused, concentrated way. And along with that, I'm going to try my best to turn to Krishna. Now, how long should this vow be for? Not forever, at this point. But maybe 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. Just for a limited amount of time. Try it. Try to consciously concentrate on doing this. Or until Janmashtami or something like that. Then, the third part, that's the second part. So the first part is you write out of a vow. Second part is decide how long it's going to be. And third part is you keep a little journal every day. And it should be really simple. Based on this point of, I want to take shelter of Krishna more when there's difficulty. Just three questions in the journal, similar to what we did in the life balancing retreat that we did. What went well? What didn't go well? And what will I do to improve what didn't go well? Three questions every day answer in my day. What went well? What didn't go well? And what will I try my best to improve? How will I try to improve what didn't go well? Every day, though, during the time of your vow, whether it's 1 week, and again, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. But the purpose of it is some follow-up so that we can try to get deeper in our Krishna consciousness. And then the last part is you have to find a friend who... And it doesn't have to be your most dear friend, but once a week, you talk with your friend by phone, or in person. But suggesting by phone that's easier. Just to discuss this particular point, how did I do in the last week in taking shelter of Krishna during difficulties, disappointments, etc.? So it doesn't have to be a long conversation, so it won't be too time-consuming, but once a week, discuss with someone, and it doesn't have to be the most intimate friend who's going to be the one counseling you and everything like that. Just to discuss, someone to talk to about how you did in trying to take shelter of Krishna and during these times. So that's what I'm going to ask you to do. So for right now, it's really hard to do this with all at once. We don't quite have enough time. But what I would suggest right now is break into groups, and you come on this side this time. Break into groups of, but there should be even number of groups. And then, first thing should just see who you're in front of you, and it's one of the devotees who are here. Just choose someone. So break into groups of twos and, but I'd like the groups to be sixes actually, close to sixes or fours. And don't make the person you're going to talk with your wife or your husband, because then it becomes something else. I told you to do this more times. You should be just keep it simple. Keep a friend, someone like that. So break into groups of fours or sixes, even numbers. Just basically just turn around. Yeah, well, there's a natural one over there. But keep the group a little bigger. So just exchange phone numbers and work out the time. And then, as soon as you finish that, individually write out your vow, what you're going to do. But keep it simple and something that you can actually do. Don't make it too big. Make it practical. And you only have 30 seconds to do it. No. 5 minutes only to write out your vow. So write it out. Okay. Come on. 2, 4, 6. Okay, you come on this side. Would you do this? Do you want to do this or not? What we're talking about. Okay, come over here. Your group is special. You have three in your part over here. You have to work out how you're going to talk. The three of you. You only have to talk to one person. So someone has to talk to two people. Okay? Okay. Okay, so you don't have to just... Now write out your vow, though. Don't spend too much time talking. The vow is personal. Write out your vow. 5 minutes. Stop talking. Stop it. Write out your vow. Except Mataji's, you can keep talking. That I've learned after 40 years. You have no one to talk to. Oh, you can talk to me later. It's okay. Write out your vow. At least someone write out your vow. Thank you. That's a very good group. You're doing so nicely, this group over here, writing everything out so nicely and so quietly. Thank you very much. This is really a nice group writing out. Keep the vow simple and practical. Don't make something you're not going to do. But it's only for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, as long as you want. Keep it very simple. And you can increase it the second week or minimize it or something. But just because I'm forcing you to write something up fast, that's why I... Oh. Okay, the next step in this, and the final step until we're finished, is talk amongst your group. But you're already doing that. So keep talking. Hare Krishna.
Wonderful.
Perfect. Very intelligent. Tell us. Thank you very much. So discuss in your groups now. Did you write down a bell? And who are you going to telephone with? Yes? Do you have numbers? Okay. And did you work out a time?
Thank you.
I'm Very important question.
Okay, everybody will love
it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay. So we want to end now. We'd like to end now. We wouldn't like to end now, but we're forced by time constraints. Krishna in the form of time. Srisha Prabhu asked a very good question that I thought it was very relevant. Please say. Ask the question. You have a particular result in mind, yes? And you're praying to Krishna. And you're standing in front of the deities. If your vow is to stand and pray to the deities more.
Maharaj, the thing that was going through my mind for the whole retreat was that we are focusing on the four deities and how to take shelter of Krishna in those situations. But the thing I was thinking was that when we do take shelter of Krishna, the mind is still saying to us that Krishna, I'm depending on you. You please take care of the situation and give me a positive outcome.
Make my stocks rise and make my enemy's stocks go down, etc., etc.
To be favorable to us, we are taking shelter of Krishna. This is personally for speaking for myself.
Yeah.
That the mind is still saying that do it the way is going to be beneficial to me or helpful to my Krishna consciousness, like a very physical difficulty or a material difficulty. But work it in a way that will be favorable to my Krishna consciousness.
So what we were trying to explain, very good question, because the thought goes through our minds, and we definitely have an attachment to the results as we would like them. But the reality is that our desires aren't the ultimate decider of what will happen. The reality is that we're in the hands of someone much greater and more intelligent and more kind than we are. And sees much better than we do, and we have our particular fate too. So surrender means, and I tried to discuss this point enough, and just wasn't enough time for good questions and considered answers like this question. Surrender means you act if you think this is best, you act. But we're ultimately dependent on Krishna for the result. And we accept that result that he gives us is actually better. Better than we deserve, perhaps. Or the proper medicine for us to cure my disease of wanting to get more and more and progress and get this, and this is the plan, and I'm going to do this, and I'm the supreme control, and this is the way this should happen, and this is the way this, and then I'm going to die, and then everything is wiped out and all our plans are finished and we're not in control. So in one sense we're trying to get used to trusting Krishna. That's gotraptevaranam tata. That's surrender. To trust the kind dispensation or the kind decisions or that Krishna is actually our best well-wisher and our plans are only... We see things according to 1 year, or 2 years, or 5 years, or most of this life. But Krishna sees in relationship to eternity. And when we think good and bad, we're judging this moment in our plan. But we don't have a true vision of what's good, and we don't have a true vision of what's bad. So we want to get some intelligence from Shastra. We want to get some intelligence from taking shelter of the deities. We want to purify our consciousness. And yes, we have our plans, but ultimately surrender means to accept Krishna's plans and his decision on things. So when we write in our journal, today I got up at this time and then I just had to brush my teeth and go through our day like that. But how did we deal with the difficulties, the distresses, the discomforts of life? Did I take shelter of Krishna? Or did I tend to to get angry at Krishna because what happened differed from my plans. That's the specific point. How did I do? What went well in that sense? Was I able to take shelter of Krishna? Did my mind run to Krishna or did it run away from Krishna? And then what to do about it when it didn't go well? Well, I can say if my vow is to pray in front of the deities, well then I'm going to take this to him tomorrow. Look what happened to me. After hearing so much and making such a firm decision and praying to you, I acted just the same or even worse than I usually act. I just got really angry and etc. Please, Krishna, unless you're merciful to me, who's going to help me? And then what will I do at the time? If I got so angry when I missed a train, what's going to happen when something serious happens? So, Krishna, please be merciful to me. And I should do this as my part in this. I'll do this and this and this. But I'm dependent on you and I accept your merciful judgment. Do you follow what I mean? Okay, but we could have private discussions during the week and etc. It would be nice to have just a class or some kind of a question and answer time during the week. I'd like to actually have a retreat that's based on just asking questions and answering them rather than, and maybe short presentations and have time for that because like such a good question I didn't have a chance to really speak on it and it helped clarify things for me, for you perhaps, and maybe some of the other devotees too. So maybe during the week we'll have question and just questions time. That'd be nice. Short presentation, maybe some speaking about Prabhupada's a verse, 10 minutes, and then both Mataji and I can answer questions. But now we'll end. And we'll end with something of great fortune for all of us. Because how many of you were able to attend Jagannath Rath Yatra that occurred in Jagannath Puri last week? No one, but there was, you were there, huh? Did you get prasadam on TV? Because Jagannath has sent some prasadam for you all. So all those who attended on TV and all those who didn't, Lord Jagannath has some mercy for you. So let us just take 1 minute or 3 minutes or as long as you want to offer some prayers to Srila Prabhupada and to Sisi Gonathai and to Sisi Radhabalava, Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Devi, and to our Guru Rajas and pray for some depth and some ability to apply what we've heard. And then when you're ready, just come up and I'll give you some Jagannath Prasadam and then go take Prasadam, Mahaprasad. And thank you so much for your association. So take a few minutes of sincere prayer. Try your best. Try to act in consistency with your deepest, most heartfelt desires. So often, the rascal mind takes us in the opposite direction that we want to go. It's like having a GPS that's really broken. Good guidance. Prabhupada's followers, Shastra, Madhupalava so kindly come to us to give us the opportunity to serve, association of devotees, to pray for some sincerity, some honest intent to move forward at our own pace perhaps, but to move forward towards the lotus feet of Krishna, true shelter. take shelter of Krishna's holy names, none different from Krishna, the deities, the Bhagavatam, not different from Krishna. And here's one very short purport that Prabhupada put when Brahma took shelter of Krishna. The devotees of the Lord, who are all confidential servitors, are sometimes perplexed in the discharge of their respective duties, but they are never discouraged. They have full faith in the Lord, and He paves the way for the smooth progress of the devotee's duty. Let's move forward in our faith in Krishna, offer our obeisances to the Prabhupada and all the Vaishnavas, and please come and have
We'd like to thank His Grace Guruji and Mother Jagatri for coming once again to Hare Krishna Valley to host this retreat. And we pray that next year they can come again, maybe 6 or 7 times.
Gopa Vrindesh Prabhu, I know you have to go, so please take some more prasad. Bhagavan Kripa. How's life treating you? Good question. Thank you. Well, Brahmachari who smiles like that must get extra.
Thank you.
One is in the back.
Pretty good.
Yeah.